Autism Awareness Month starts today. South Coast speech pathologist and teacher Vivian Freestone has created a beautiful work of fiction called Discovering Matthew, which helps to shine a light on the world of ASD and how neurodivergent individuals can use their unique talents to make the world a better place. She joins me now. Hi, Viv.
Hello, Jenny. Thank you for that lovely intro.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Yeah, tell us about Matthew. What's he all about?
Ah, Matthew. Well, Matthew is a conglomeration of many, many children, both male and female, whom I've worked with or met or seen families with children like these children over some 40 years in the field. And he's no one child from all of that, but he's, I guess, all of those children. So I've tried to use all the experiences that I've had and the things that I've seen and observed and heard about from those families, and I've tried to shine a light into his life. So Matthew is a boy with an autism spectrum disorder, and he lives in a fairly sort of typical family with a mum and a dad and an older sister. And the story tells what happens to him over some time in his sort of late primary school years.
Mm. Yes, and the way in which he grapples with communication and basically not really being understood, right?
Exactly right. Well, we know that autism spectrum disorders typically affect children's sensory systems, their behaviour, their social communication in particular, and that is a lifelong effect. So Matthew is diagnosed, but there has been a few issues with that, I suppose. I don't want to give too much away, Jenny, because I'd really like people to read the book. And that affects the way that people around him look at him, understand him or don't understand him, and also affects the family in lots of very significant ways.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a sister who his mum likes to call Breezy Bree, right, because she just, things come a little bit more easily to her, so it's kind of grappling with that in the relationship as well.
Yeah, that's right. Brianna, who quite likes going surfing and a few other things, but things are pretty easy for her, whereas Matthew struggles and would rather just run out the door a lot of the time. And that affects his family in many ways. I've deliberately set the story in a rural area, a reasonably remote rural area, because that's where I've spent the vast majority of my time working with families and living. And currently I'm also working in a remote rural area, so I suppose it's very dear to my heart. Mm. And I also am very aware of the difficulties that families have in even getting diagnosis to start with in these areas, and then getting regular good quality services. So yeah, it's sort of combined all of those 40 plus years of watching and looking and trying to deliver services in those remote areas, and then also trying to shine a bit of a light for people that live alongside these families. So grandparents, other relatives, people in the community, teachers, doctors, just trying to get inside the head of these kids in a way that's accessible. Mm. So that's what I've aimed to do with the story. It's meant to be accessible to a wide variety of people.
And I imagine that people with autism would also get a kick out of it, especially younger people, because it's nice to have a bit of representation and say, hey, I can relate to that.
Mm. Well, I think that works both ways, Jenny, because I have had a little bit of feedback from some young people that are reading it at the moment, and that's been positive. But the other thing I would say there is that the best way that I have learned about autism, apart from observing and watching and talking with people, is actually reading the stories that people with autism themselves have written about their lives. And there's so many out there that are not textbooks, but they are an insight into that person's thinking, the way that they learn, the way that it impacts their lives every day. In fact, I'm reading one right at the moment that is called How to Be Human, and it talks really clearly about the amount of energy it takes to get through a day when you are on the autism spectrum, and how that impacts the person at the end of the day or right throughout their day. And I hadn't really even thought about that. So just that very tiredness, exhaustion level and lack of ability to concentrate when they've got through, say, a day at school or a day at work.
And that's because neurotypical people like to think that everyone should do things their way. So a lot of people with autism are trying to mask what we call mask their disorder, and it's just coming at a massive cost to them, where maybe we could just learn to live alongside each other a little bit better and communicate in different ways.
There's a wonderful lady called Sue Larkey who does a lot of work in this space, and she is currently putting out some information about the masking and the veneer of coping. So I think that's a really nice way of putting it. It's a veneer. It's a it's a mask or a layer on top that Matthew in the book tries to show that he's coping, but he really isn't underneath. The family try to show that they're coping, but they really aren't underneath. Even Brianna, who's Breezy Bree, she goes off surfing, but underneath it all, she realises that the wheels are falling off her family, as it were. So this is not uncommon, and I think what it results in is, you know, the sort of statistics like only 40% of people with autism are actually in the workforce between the working age of 15 and 64, as opposed to 83% of people with no disability and even 53% of people with all disabilities. So they're well behind in terms of participation in the workforce. So why is that? They're not people that are not competent. They're very competent people, and they learn and think differently, and therefore we neurotypical people could really benefit from having them next to us in the workforce. But quite apparently they're not able to participate. So, yes, this is what my little mission is with Matthew. And there may have to be a sequel, Jenny. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, absolutely, because so many people, you know, who were children with autism grow up to be adults, and they're still in the world trying to navigate their way through it.
Yeah, I think we have to look at high school. Matthew, the story finishes when Matthew is about to start high school, and I think just that whole adolescent engagement in high school story is waiting to be told. Whether I tell it or whether someone else does, I'm not sure.
Author of Discovering Matthew, Vivian Freestone from Encounter Bay is with us. Hey, what do you make of the new Premier's intended major investment in autism for schools, Vivian?
Well, I got very excited when I read about this just before the election, and then my husband contacted the new Premier's office, and we got a copy of his policy statement. And what he's talking about doing is putting huge dollars into lead teachers in every public primary school who will have a lot of training and experience with autism, I hope. That's the intention. He wants to make South Australia the autism-friendly state, Jenny. So I, for one, would be, you know, really happy to see that happen. And he wants people to sign up, businesses, organisations to sign up to the autism-friendly charter that Autism SA has initiated. And the other things that he's looking at, which is close to my heart, is more money for early intervention into preschools and other sorts of intervention centres, and more money for therapy. So all of those things get a tick from me. But I would also like to see one more thing, and that is a simpler process of diagnosis and a more accessible process of diagnosis. Because once again, if you live outside of the city, diagnosis is both expensive and really hard to achieve. And even if you live in the city, it's expensive and hard to achieve.
And for girls, I hear it's even harder, because often we don't think of girls being the ones with autism, but they do get it too.
Absolutely. There is a bit of a weighting towards boys. I think it's about 4-1 boys to girls. But traditionally girls were not diagnosed early, mainly because they had the language ability and they were able to appear to be sociable, if you like. Now that the diagnostic criteria have changed a bit, language disability is not part of the diagnosis, and I think that's led to a really big increase in the recognition that girls are not managing socially, they're not managing generally in different ways, and they're getting an earlier diagnosis. It's still largely boys, but yes, definitely people are recognising this as a disability across the board, which I think is really positive.
Vivian, how can we get a copy of your book?
You can contact me directly, because this is a self-published book. So at the moment, the marketing is directly through me via either Facebook, Viv Freestone, or just my email address, which is my surname, Freestone, F-R-E-E-S-T-O-N-E, and then number 8, freestone8@bigpond.com. The other way that people can in the local area get a copy of the book is I will be signing books as we speak, Jenny, at Victor Harbour today at the bookshop. And also tomorrow we have a book launch in Murray Bridge at 10 a.m. at the library. And then next Wednesday, the 6th of April, we have a book launch in Victor Harbour at the library. And also coming up in May, on the 9th of May, we have a book launch at the Strass Library. So, lots of ways.
Brilliant.
And eventually it will also be available online through different booksellers. But that's still coming.
Yeah, lovely. And as far as I'm aware, with the Victor Harbour Library one, the session from 5 p.m. next Wednesday, you'll need to book on Eventbrite. We'll put a link up on our podcast under the shows tab on our website after this. Thanks so much for your time today, Vivian Freestone. So lovely to talk to you.
Thanks, Jenny. Real pleasure. Bye-bye.